Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Marie.
What are you up to later? Want to join me for happy hour?
I'm all in.
And guess what's amazing? Our listeners and friends of the podcast can also join us because Brave New Teaching Happy Hour has officially launched. Cheers!
Cheers, everyone! We are officially hanging out a little bit longer after school with an extended, extra, private podcast feed just for you.
Yes. Members of Happy Hour get extra 15 minutes of the podcast, give or take, because you know us, we run a little bit long. It's just kind of how we are. But if you would like to get in on this Happy Hour action, please join us. It is only $5 a month. Head to curriculumrehab.com/happy hour and get yourself signed up, because when you're there, Amanda, tell our friends what we do every month for our Happy Hour members.
I think my favorite part is coming up with a new free resource for our listeners every month. And then we pretty much break down that resource and how to use it. We also like to have guests on to do extended episodes and even Q&A that's just for you about that resource. It's really exclusive and super private just for you.
So if you are like us and you like hanging out, you like chit-chatting about all things that are teaching, teacher life, and everything under that umbrella, join us for happy hour and we will see you there. Bye.
Bye.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. Friends, we want a show of hands. A show of hands if you have ever in your career, no matter how long or brief, struggled or had issues with students actually doing the reading at home. Hands up.
Me.
Yeah, same. Little brown-haired emoji girl. Hand up. That's me. Yes. And today we are going to talk about reading. We're going to talk about students who won't read at home, which is, by the way, teenage me. Yeah, because it is a thing. It is everywhere. Right, Amanda?
No, I've never struggled with this. I'm always perfect.
You just raised your hand. You are a lying liar.
Okay. Pants on fire. You're right.
Pants on fire. It is universal. It does not necessarily also stop at the English language arts world that students won't do the reading or the watching or the whatever, right? Like, we're going to call it reading, but reading is so many different things, especially in our contemporary classrooms, but it's basically the accessing of the content at home. Or like outside of class time. We're not just going to talk about, okay, they won't do it. We're going to talk about what to do when they won't do it. Not if, but when.
So really, this episode is worth like $10 million.
Basically, that's what we're saying. So anybody out there that's like, hey, I got $10 million on this Sunday.
Biggest, I think this is like the number one pain point from teachers. Like currently, I mean, it has been for a while, but like this is
absolutely
like we're going to give away our secret sauce on a podcast for free. So.
And I mean, okay, we have to like disclaimer, it's not without a little bit of teacher adjustment to varying degrees. So just be ready for that.
Yeah.
If you've been here for a minute, you know that we're about like truth and transparency and like reality. So like, let's get on the plane of reality, shall we? Are you ready, my friend?
Let's do it.
Cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show. Okay, so as we get started, we do need to say, I had a little disclaimer that it's not without teacher work. And the first piece is focusing in on the teacher. Amanda has a nice little get up and get at 'em pep talk for us all. And then I will talk us through turning that around on students because they are not without adjustment as well. Amanda, what do we do when students are not reading or whatever that means at home? Because, oh my gosh, it's so annoying and frustrating and it takes all my energy. Help me.
So number one, deep breath.
Okay.
Like that's where we have to start. I also think we didn't mention it in the intro, but this episode, we're going to focus on whole class novels. So right now, this episode, part one, we're going to focus on the whole class novel unit. And the next episode, we'll look at Lit Circle's choice reading types of units that are different from a whole class novel. So just a caveat that that's where the mindset conversation is going to come from. Okay. Mindset shifts for teachers. Okay. One piece of this mindset is that we are conditioned for a lot of ways to be at a deficit mindset, right? The kids won't read at home. We have a handful of really awful experiences of assigning reading and then having a lesson plan that's reading dependent and all of that burning up in a giant blaze of fire, right? It's a disaster. We assign chapter 1 and 2 for homework. The next day, we have a lesson ready to go for chapters 1 and 2 and nobody read, of course, right? We assume it was 100% of our kids didn't read because everything's a disaster. The one kid who always does everything has to do everything. And it's just terrible. So we have to unpack that and realize that part of why that failed is the way it was set up by us. And so one of the things that I recommend teachers do first and foremost is get out of that deficit mindset and start to really just envision the purpose of this unit as a whole. Marie and I talk about the big picture all the time. So as you're taking this deep breath, I want you to remember that in a unit of study, there are so many things for kids to learn outside of the plot of a novel. But Amanda, if they don't know what happened on these pages, how can we do anything? Okay. The answer is we can do plenty. And the mindset shift is really part of this process. So first, let's take a look at how you're assigning the reading. Are you assigning it chapters 1 and 2 tonight, 3 and 4 tomorrow, 5 and 6, like little pieces at a time? If so, that's probably one of the struggle points. Mm-hmm. One shift you can make here is assigning larger portions over larger amounts of time. Mm-hmm. When you assign maybe, let's say, chapters 1 through 5, over the course of a week, what you're doing here is giving students a week's worth of opportunities to find time to read. So when I adjust that, and we'll kind of talk more about those other pieces later, this to me has been a shift for equity, right? Because stopping assigning reading or reading it all out loud, that's not helping equity. Like that's like a very misleading, I think, direction that we've been headed is that, oh, well, if I give everything to everyone, we will have achieved equity, when I don't think that's necessarily the case. But reframing how we assign the reading is one really important step to try. So like what I like to do is on a Monday, we'll start the book together and then I'll assign the next X number of chapters for the next Monday. So they have the whole week. And if the week is taken up by sports and work and everything, the weekend is still there. And then the during school time is also there for the whole week. The lunch hour, the study hall hour, like whatever those periods during the day are, there's time for kids to find something to read. And you know what? I also give them permission in that time to skim. Like if you get bored, skim and get to the next point. Use a little bit of Spark Notes. Get to the next chapter. It's okay. Because the next piece of this mindset, and this is where I'm going to kind of wrap up by end of things, is the mindset that I try to help teachers think about too, is remembering that this unit is about studying literature. This unit is not for us about fluency. It's not about necessarily having a 100% comprehension of every single page. My goal in a unit that's all class one novel are big picture, thematic, essential question-based critical thinking skills. So I want my kids to read. Of course I do. Do I need them to have 100% comprehension page one to page 360? No, but I do need them to start taking ownership of the reading and thinking about it as we're studying a story and I'm going to do the best that I can with what I have and show up with what I can every week. And I'm going to do the best and I'm going to keep teaching you no matter what.
Well, and it goes back to something that you and I have both said so many times on here, that we say in our course curriculum rehab, that we have said in our festivals, our Shakespeare festivals and our dystopia festival. This entire approach is all about decentralizing the novel or decentralizing the text, decentralizing the teacher, frankly, like putting students in more of a driving role of their education. And quite frankly, if I give them a couple chapters a night, every single night, they're not going to read it the same way.
No way.
Yes, they're not. You know what I like? It's just that overwhelms me as an adult thinking about having to keep up with something like that. But knowing that I have this, that, and the other in my life going on and I can kind of plan around stuff.
Yes.
What a great skill to teach our kids through practice. Now, rather than getting to college like I was and being like, oh, I don't have to do it tonight. It's not due until whatever. And not having those time management skills and not being able to see the end result and see that next week we were going to have a test or a paper or whatever on the reading. And I hadn't flipping done any of it the day before and having to cram a whole entire book. Like, obviously, those things are still going to happen. But isn't that a great skill for students to start learning? I always say this, in the soft landing place of our classrooms while they're still in grade school. Like, yeah.
That's kind of what I meant by this idea of equities. Because what I'm hearing from teachers is that kids aren't reading. They're not complying with my reading schedule. So my response or my department's or the top down response is, well, now to make sure kids read, we read to them. And not that there's anything wrong with a read aloud every now and again, like read alouds have an absolutely important place, but like taking that off, like not giving the kids the chance to navigate that world on their own or like giving them, like you said, like those structured landing places and the experience to like figure out their own schedule. I mean, that's so important.
Well, and yeah, because how the hell are they going to do it if we keep doing it for them? I hear myself. Like, I get it. I like control. I like to know exactly where we're going to be. I like to know the intended outcome. Like I totally, but I also know that I already have those skills. So I can't just give them to somebody else. I have to let them learn, and learning is hard and it's messy. Hello, friends. Please excuse the interruption of this episode. We wanted to let you know about something very, very exciting coming to you from Brave New Teaching.
Psh, psh. This is fireworks and confetti. Do you hear it? We are so freaking pumped to bring you the Shakespeare Teacher Festival again. Round two, we are bringing to you an entirely new modern take on Shakespeare in the classroom. So if you joined us last year, that's awesome. But this year, everything is brand new.
Absolutely. Last year was Basics with the Bard, and this year's Shakespeare Teacher Festival is Shakespeare in the Modern Classroom with your modern students, and exactly how to frame that, what we do. We're going to dive into some specific plays, a little bit deeper of a look at some of the most commonly taught plays, Romeo and Juliet. Let's frame that differently. And we can't wait to get started. So make sure that you head to the show notes or just go to bravenewteaching.com to get yourself registered. Make sure you bring in a couple of friends with you. It's going to be a good time. All right, let's get back into the show. And so that leads me to my piece, which is that students are going to need the opportunity over and over and over again to fail. They're going to need the opportunity in this world to be able to hit that soft landing place. And maybe it gets a little harder every time they hit it within your classroom. So that by the time, like, because truly, like Amanda said, we're not in the business, at least in my classroom, of developing fluency in any singular text. Like, I'm not looking for the next Mary Shelley scholar who has downloaded the entirety of Frankenstein into their brain. And, you know, like, that's not what I'm looking for in a public school 12th grade English lit course. What I am looking for is putting out into the world a kid who is more prepared when they leave my class than when they entered my class. And part of that preparation is just being able to be a person and have the confidence to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're going to have to learn the hard way sometimes. Some kids have it. And even those kids who do have it are still kids and they still have to learn things over and over again. So where the teacher's mindset shift lies in relinquishing control, which is something that we talk about quite a bit, but it's just a matter of defining what that control, like what you will control and what you need to let go of and what you've decided to let go of and kind of like experiment. The student mindset shift that has to start from day one is a lot of also what Amanda was saying was that it's okay to skim. I always tell kids, I don't want you to pause and savor every comma. Like, that is not this class. That is not, maybe it is this class in a poem. That is not this class in an entire novel study that we're not doing that with Gatsby, which I know I just gave a few people a heart attack. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
We'll make it through this. I have faith in our relationship. It's just not what I'm, that's not the purpose, frankly. The purpose is that they have something, which is The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, as a vehicle for critical thinking for whatever our essential question is, as ammunition for conversation, right? Like, it's just part of the bigger why. And for students to start to understand that, they will put less pressure on themselves and they will actually do it more too. Like, it's this weird psychology thing.
People don't believe me. Like, yeah. That's what I tell them. I said, back off and assign bigger chunks over time and be consistent with those expectations.
Yes.
And kids will be like, oh, like, and then when you are consistent, they start to trust you, which we talked about not too long ago on our
unpopular opinions, part one. Yeah.
It is, kids will trust that style resonates better with students when we're able to do that. I mean, and I think for us too, to remember that, like, as much as reading books is a very linear process for us because we're good at it, This allows us to be a little bit more cyclical, because when I talk to kids on a Monday about the past 70 pages, I can say, well, what stood out to you? And they have 70 pages to pick from of things that stood out to them. And I don't care if they got it in the right order or if they got certain names right. Like comprehension's important, but comprehension in a novel is, again, holistic.
Right.
If we are continually panicking about comprehension, like page by page, we shouldn't be doing a whole class novel. Right? Like, that's another part of this mindset, is that understanding the purpose of a whole class novel is exactly what Marie just said. It's a vehicle toward discussing these bigger questions, our essential questions and critical thinking. We have other units of study in the year. We have research units, small, short story units. We have all different kinds of units that can do different things.
I can play devil's advocate here too and say, well, then if it doesn't matter, then why not just do a short story all the time? Like, why do novels at all? Because there's something to be said about seeing something through that is longer, and that has, you know, that students can go on a journey over several weeks or even a couple of weeks, but it's something that you're doing all together. There's also something to that. And when we're talking again about equity, like Amanda said, Monday to Monday, coming back and saying over the past 70 pages, what stood out to you, that allows everybody the opportunity to participate. Not just the kids who got to finish. That gives everybody the opportunity to say something, to have something to give to the conversation. Obviously, our kids who got 60 to 70 pages of the 70 pages actually read are going to get more out of it. But our kids who got 10 pages read out of the 70 would have otherwise gotten nothing out of the conversation. And now they're going to get something out of the conversation. So it's like, it's really not taking away from anybody. It's only giving to our students who would otherwise not be able to participate, not be able to engage, because for whatever reason, they didn't read. So this takes us into our next piece of what to do when students won't read at home. And that is, what are you going to do in class about it? right? Like, so what are you going to do between the Mondays? What are you going to do to pull the thread through and make sure, because even our kids who would be reading at home are kind of going to get a little goofy, right? Might lose a little bit of track, and you do have to keep them going. We're not saying assign reading and then never talk about it until next Monday. So what are we going to do along the way? Something that we talk about often in here. It's our favorite teaching strategy, mm-hmm. and it's utilizing close reading passages.
Yeah. And this is where I think I posted a reel about this earlier in January, and this is where people came at me with pitchforks, like, you don't care if kids read the whole assignment, right? Well, no, because here's where that skill level, comprehension level, and analytical level of English instruction come to be. So as much as I love a good read aloud, think about like the instructional input and then the educational output of a read aloud lesson. I'm not saying there's no value, because that's not true. There's a lot of value to kids hearing an expert fluent reader reading out loud.
Totally.
It has a place. Now, a close reading lesson is something that Marie and I use to give students the opportunity to analyze a very finite section of text under a super, super microscope. And so for example, since you brought up Gatsby, I'll take Gatsby as an example. Okay. In chapter one, we have this dinner, this meal, right? Mm-hmm. And across the descriptions of the scenes, I like to do a kind of like a side-by-side close read where we have Nick's very first description of Tom and then Nick's very first description of Daisy. And so I put smart. Them.
You've never told me about that before. That's a good one.
I have these two passages side by side on a worksheet, a doc, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the kids read the description of Tom. I know this is probably what I'd say max two paragraphs. And then the same with Daisy, almost the same amount of text. And they're looking for the same thing in both descriptions of color. They're looking at just descriptions like physical description, and then probably one or two other things, maybe just one, very, very limited. And so I read like one out loud, then I do popcorn on the other, or I read and then they read it again. So like we're reading this passage multiple times. Then we go in with our highlighters. We're going to highlight all the color imagery in green. We're going to highlight all the physical mm-hmm. description in blue. And then we just dig and we just peel. And at the end of the lesson, I'm asking all of my students, remember, I don't know if everyone read. I mean, I probably do from the quiz, we'll talk about quizzing later, but like at this moment in this week, it has no impact on my lesson whether or not students have read this chapter. Okay. Zero. Right. Because they all read it with me right now, this scene. And so at the end of the period, we're having this discussion about color symbolism, the differences between Tom and Daisy, Nick's, you know, kind of odd ways of describing both of them and what on earth this has to do with, you know, the trifecta, right, of this relationship. Then we even kind of zoom out more, right? We can talk about the society and in general. So we're able to take this little tiny piece of text and go further and further and further and further and further into the big picture conversation. And it's a glorious thing.
And so what that does, I'm the whole time Amanda's talking, I'm going, oh my
your God. Lesson planning.
Yes. I'm not teaching juniors next term, but like next time I do, that's such a good lesson. And then I'm kind of mad at you for holding out on me. No, I'm just kidding. What this does is, again, it goes back to all it does is add to student experience. It does not detract from anybody. So in my classroom, I have a mix of anywhere from AP students. I'm not teaching AP, but like could be an AP Lang or AP Lit. I've got like general ed. Maybe they like reading, maybe whatever, like students that are just going to take general ed all along the way, which is all I took in high school was general ed classes. And they were great. And I did great. I've got English language learners. I've got students on IEPs and 504s of varying degrees and like different abilities and different levels of need. All in one big room, and we're all doing the same thing all together. So everybody gets the same scaffolding. Everybody gets the same everything for the most part. I mean, some kids, you guys know what I mean, like legalities aside, if somebody needs something separate for their IEP, blah, 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 blah. So what lessons like this do for our entire population is they model, first and foremost, reading skills. reading skills, and what good readers do to analyze as they go. It also models by thinking aloud how to make connections, which is part of that analytical skills. It models so many different things. So if I'm a student who could be in an AP class, but I'm in a general ed class, or let's say you're teaching AP, right? And you're going to use this sort of a strategy, is it helps me affirm what I already know and fine tune what needs fine tuning within my own repertoire of skills. Because I'm watching my teacher, who is an expert in this, who has done this so many times, or who at least has a degree already and has been trained to do this. And I'm following along and I'm participating and I am honing my skills. What it does for my students on another end of the spectrum, who might have specific reading goals built into their IEP, who are extremely reluctant readers, who are going to need like a graphic novel to go alongside something that we are reading, is it models for them the same things. What good readers do, how to think analytically. I mean, it's all the things, and it provides them the opportunity to be active participants in the moment. Whether, like you said, whether they know what has already transpired, whether they have just seen this for the very first time because they said, piss off, I'm not reading that. Or something got in the way. They had to watch their brother or sister. They had to work. They had basketball practice. Like whatever the things are, it does not matter because we're teaching skills. The kid that's read is going to get a lot richer of an experience and they're going to have more to say. But what they have to say is also going to enrich the experience of the other kids without deterring from the experience of the kids that had a lot to say, right? Like it's not leaning on the really academically active kids. It's not leaning on them completely.
No.
It's taking the pressure off of them so that they can continue to learn and not feel all of that. And our kids who need to just build the skill in the first place are seeing extra modeling.
Right. Because if you think about the start of this lesson, everyone's in the same place.
Yep.
If kids did their quote reading homework at home, you might be a little bit more comfortable with the context, right? You might have more to say at the end of the lesson when we talk about like the impact of this over, right? More examples that they saw in the chapter. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. But from like exactly your point, like that's going to give, what that does is gives everyone the same playing field. And even kids who don't quote like read at home might be really freaking good readers. If it's a concentrated amount with a lot of like scaffolding and direction, this is just, and then I want you also to picture like in your mind while you're driving, look out over the horizon and picture the next 5 weeks. So even if you only close read once a week, mm-hmm. by the end of the novel, students will have done a concentrated deep analysis of 5 scenes from The Great Gatsby. Do you think any student in your class can write an essay or do an exam of whatever it is,
whatever that summative is going to be. Yes.
You better believe every single student has 5 solid teacher-led examples as a backbone for that assessment, which is exactly what we want summatives to do, is assess skills and what kids can do. We have given them that. And if you're going to do more than one close read a week, that's even more for kids to lean on that need that support, and even more guidance for kids who are ready to bloom a little bit more. That's even just more like structure for them to lean on as they push a little bit further on in their analysis.
It's the great differentiation within one singular lesson and setting. It's honing everybody's skills, because you're using a different passage of text every single time. So even the kids who, like I said, are really comfortable or really sharp, they still have something new because it's a new chunk of text. It's a new something, even though you're doing the same stuff over and over and over again. They're still getting better. They're still getting sharper. They're still making new connections. They're figuring out new things. Yes. This also leads us to our final part today, which is our insurance policy. So what happens to the child who refuses or for whatever reason cannot read one lick of the book? The only thing that they get is the close reads, and they were out on quarantine for 2 of those weeks. What is our insurance policy?
Well, our insurance policy is one to have records of formative assessments, right? Like formative assessment is what I'm using weekly, at least once, if not more times, to check in on where kids are on that other side. So like we have talked about close reading, but if we are going to talk about like the bigger picture of the week, I do a Monday to Monday. That's just my thing. On my Mondays is when I have a Sesame Street quiz. And a Sesame Street quiz, if you've never heard of them, you need to go watch our masterclass called Down with the Reading Quiz. We've got lots of different, three different formative assessments that are brilliant to use to check for formative progress and growth. The one I like to use is called Sesame Street. And so I give this quiz on a Monday. And what that quiz allows me to do is kind of go back to the very beginning of the episode when I said, I used to think every kid didn't read. And it was kind of this like really deficit mindset. These quizzes have helped me actually like know who has read because lots of kids do read at home, but it's the output of learning about what they know that maybe I've had a lot of missteps with in the past. So after the Sesame Street quiz, I kind of break my kids into groups in my head. I have a group of kids that are reading and with it, a group who are sort of reading and sort of with it, and then a group that hasn't touched it. And so then I actually know that I have 10 in this group, 15 in this group, and 4 in this group, or whatever the breakdown is.
Such a small class. I'm sorry, keep going.
Well, I'm just, I know, the syllabus 40. But whatever that breakdown is, I then actually have information, which is what a formative assessment is supposed to do, information moving forward into that week. So maybe on Tuesday, I want to do a group activity where the group who's reading and with it is doing something together, like more like independent. Then I have another group that's working with my co-teacher on something. And then maybe the kids who haven't read yet, they're sitting with me in the hallway and we're reading together on Tuesday. And then they're going to retake that quiz at the end of the period. And you know what I mean? It's like I can then differentiate on my Tuesday. And then when we come all back together again, eventually for the close read, we've all kind of gotten what we needed in the meantime. And we're back to close reading. We're back together and we're going to move forward because the next chunk of reading is due the next Monday. And so for my kids who didn't read, we're going to read what we can. We're going to try to do a little bit of catch up. And then whenever they get where they are, I'm going to say, here's Spark Notes. I want you to get caught up until this chapter and then keep going because this story is bigger than getting stuck on chapter one. Let's go. Fire under butt.
Back to mindset, back to all those things. Yes. And that big insurance policy leans on skill building. It leans on assessing skills. And like Amanda said, if you've not had a chance to take a look at our free masterclass Down with the Reading Quiz, we will have that linked in the show notes. It goes over our favorite formative assessments, how we use them, why we use them, right? Like what data we're looking for, like Amanda started to explain. And we also have a podcast episode. She mentioned Sesame Street quizzes. We have an episode of this podcast from last season where we walk through the entirety of a Sesame Street quiz. So if that's something that you could use, like even a refresher on, if you already know what we're talking about, we'll make sure that that is linked in the show notes as well. But really the biggest lean is that we are assessing skills, not necessarily content. That's our jobs. And it is a big shift philosophically in the education world, especially in English language arts, because we have traditionally been a place of learn the novel, talk about the novel, take a test on the novel. And that's just not where we're at in the 21st century. So, yeah.
It's a lot.
I was just going to say, I feel like we have given our listeners a lot. And so this is probably going to be a good time. Next week, we're going to come back with another episode. We're going to run through the exact same things we've already talked about. This week, we were talking about singular texts where everybody's doing the same thing. Next week, we're going to talk about what this looks like when people are doing different things. So also to backtrack, the last couple of weeks, if you heard or have missed even those episodes, we talked about independent reading. We talked a little bit about the difference between independent and choice reading. I talk about choice reading a lot in my different social media channels. So we want to talk about what happens when you give kids choice, independent, finite choice, whatever it is, and they still won't read. What do you do? And what does what do the three things we've talked about, mindset, close reading, and our Down With Reading quiz, sort of insurance policies with formative assessments, how does that translate to when students could be reading different things all around the whole entire room? So take a breath, everybody. It's a lot.
One quick note for those of you who commented, I heard from a handful of you, which first of all, this is an atrocity. But I know a lot of you are defaulting to reading out loud because you don't have enough books to send them home. Okay. This is ridiculous. That's that weird. You would be assigned a whole class novel, given 25 copies of it, and then given 125 students. That's ridiculous.
Actually, and illegal in the state of California.
I mean, I cannot believe. I was at a school where this was the case too. So I'm going to share a quick little hack. I'm going to share the clean version of this. And if you want to like use your imagination, I don't want to go to copyright infringement jail. So I'm going to just try to be cool about this. But one of the things that we like to use is called Actively Learn. I know it's not ideal. I know kids don't really like to read on their computers at home, but it's something. It's a starting place. Actively Learn is a great platform that allows you to import a class list and then upload three free items into the library every month. If you have a PDF, for example, of something that you're reading that's been legally obtained, you might upload this item into the Actively Learn library and you can assign it to your students.
I need to try Actively Learn.
Yes. Also, on a very serious note, Actively Learn has a library of these novels. Novels that are almost like, at least if they're classics for the most part, like they're in public domain, they're free. They're already there. So if you're doing, I know like Shakespeare plays are in there. Some of like the Beowulfs and stuff are in there. Gatsby, I taught on Actively Learn for 2 years during COVID, is 50 cents per license. It's actually cheaper than buying the book.
Than the book. Yeah.
So, and I'm all for having class sets of novels you can send home to kids and they can annotate. Like, that's a beautiful thing. That's never been a reality in any school that I've worked at. So I totally get that. So be sure to check out Actively Learn. This is not sponsored by them. I've tried to reach out and be like, can you give me money? I talk about you all the time, but they just don't answer. I still love them though. So it's okay. Hashtag Actively Learn. Where are you at? But yeah, check them out and see if you can take advantage of some uploading of materials.
Okay. That is very cool. Well, thank you for that. And friends, like we said, there's a lot. Jot down your notes, rewind, re-listen wherever you need to. Next week, we will be coming back at you with the same things, but in new ways. And if you have a moment, leave us a rating and review on iTunes, you know, in between all of the notes and the rewinding and all of that. We would ever so appreciate it because it helps other teachers out there find us and find our Brave New Teaching community. And with that, we are going to say goodbye and we will see you next time.
Bye. Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.